Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnire. Continuing our look through the forts of Florida, today we're going to talk about Fort Gadsden, also known as the, quote, Negro Fort, which was a British-built fort along the banks of the Apalachicola River in what is the Florida Panhandle, was actually at that time also the Panhandle of Florida. And it was a fort that the British built, and when they abandoned it, they turned it over to the Seminole people, and very, very sad story as to what happens in terms of this fort and the brutality of the Americans led by Andrew Jackson and others in terms of the fort in the what we now call the First Seminole War. But the wars of the 18 teens, which were frequent in Florida. We've talked about the Patriot War. We've talked about the Creek War, which spills out over into Florida with Andrew Jackson, with the Americans fighting the British, the Creeks, and the Seminoles in Florida.
The fort was refortified and really kind of built to its more impressive state in 1814 by the British. During the War of 1812 and 1814, the conflict that pitted the British against the United States of America, we've already talked about on this podcast the Patriots War, which was a front of the war in East Florida between the Spanish and American settlers, or American aggressors, really, aspect of this war of 1812, where Spain was allied with Britain. And let's remember, Britain had ceded East and West Florida back to Spain as part of the peace treaty in 1783. However, British influence remained strong in kind of the anarchist state of Spanish Florida from 1783 onward. And Spain aligned with Britain in the Napoleonic Wars and aligned with Britain against the United States in the War of 1812, effectively gave Britain a free hand in Spanish East Florida. In a future episode, we're going to talk about Fort Mosse, which I'm also researching for the book I'm currently writing. And that was the first permanent settlement of African Americans in what is now a free African Americans in what is now the United States. There's so much interesting history in and around St. Augustine that hasn't been told. And Fort Mosse being just outside of at the time, the Spanish settlement of St. Augustine. But let's make our way back to what is now Franklin County, the banks of the Apalachicola River, and the 1800s. So Edward Nichols was the British commander. Sir Edward Nichols was the British commander. He was an officer in the Royal Marines. Nichols was Irish, and obviously after the Act of Union of 1800, which united the kingdoms of Great Britain and Ireland. Ireland had its own parliament, but had been governed by English kings going back even to the 12 and 1300s, depending on which part of Ireland. And obviously, Ireland was more loyal to the crown during the English Revolution, during the Cromwell Revolution. Cromwell, a noted anti-Catholic, right, a Puritan. Anyway, don't want to get too deep into British history in this episode. Remember, this is a podcast about Florida history. But Nichols, Sir Edward Nichols, was an Ulster Protestant, and he was enlisted in the Royal Navy at the age of 11 in 1795, which was before the Act of Union. So we can consider him a British officer. He was a committed abolitionist. This is really important, obviously, and an advocate for Native American rights. He had served in the Napoleonic Wars in the Royal Navy and then came as a Marine commander to Spanish Florida. He was the leader of the British attempt to recruit local allies on the Southern Front against the United States. So that meant Native Americans and freed African slaves who by and large supported the British during that conflict. He set up his base at Prospect Bluff, which was on the Apalachicola River, and that was what we now call in the Negro Fort, or what became known as the Negro Fort. He was able to reinforce that fort, as I mentioned earlier. He recruited Black and Native American corps to become Marines, colonial Marines, for the British Marines, and stationed them at this fort. Also important to note that the Creek Indians on the north of the Alabama and Florida, and Alabama and Georgia border with Florida, or the Georgia border with Florida. In fact, we'll get into it in another episode, but what is now coastal Alabama and coastal Mississippi and the Florida parishes of Louisiana were all part of British West Florida and then part of Spanish West Florida until 1810. So that's something to remember, that historically what is now at least the coastal part of Alabama and Mississippi had been governed as part of Florida by both the British and the Spanish previously. We've talked in previous episodes, and I've written fairly extensively on the Florida Squeeze, and I'm writing a book now, as I mentioned earlier, about runaway slaves coming to Spanish Florida, coming to British Florida, leaving the southern U.S. And the British encouraged this during the Revolutionary War, right? Slaves fled from the southern colonies and to St. Augustine in East Florida. And obviously, I mentioned Fort Moresby earlier. There's a whole history we're going to go through in another podcast. And we've touched on in some of the previous podcasts of runaway slaves from the Carolinas coming to East Florida, what became East Florida in the 1600s and 1700s. This continued into the early 1800s and actually intensified with the independent United States, effectively after the election of Thomas Jefferson in 1800, controlled by slave states, controlled by the South, as it would be for the most part until 1860. And the Seminole Indians' willingness to accept runaway slaves and make them, quote, what we historically have called Black Seminoles. So you have Native Americans and these runaway slaves at this fort, led by Sir Edward Nichols, or later to be Sir Edward Nichols at the time. He's the commander of British forces. The war ends in 1815. Nichols is recalled to the British Isles, but he intentionally leaves a fully armed fort in the hands of the Blacks in particular, not the Native Americans took kind of a secondary role in this, in the hands of the freed African Americans. The freed Blacks who had served alongside the British in the War of 1812. This was a reward for their loyalty and their service. And there were Creek allies and Seminole allies. Of course, those of you who know the history of the Seminole tribe know that they broke off the Creeks, right? Moved to Florida. We don't want to get into that today. But so they were there as well. Nichols is recalled to Britain, but his hope as an abolitionist, as a committed abolitionist, as an Irishman, who obviously Irishman knew prejudice, I just talked about Oliver Cromwell a few minutes ago, was hoping that this could become the defense, right, the bulwark against the expansion of slavery in the neighboring United States. It could become a center of resistance to slavery near the southern border of the United States. It would be a harbor for runaway slaves. The press in the United States in this, the so-called era of good feelings, where you had one party rule, the Democratic Party, which was the pro-slavery party. Let's not forget there wasn't an anti-slavery party until the Republican Party was founded in the 1850s. The Whigs had pro-slavery and anti-slavery elements. The Whigs were not formed until resistance to President Andrew Jackson created the need for an anti-Jacksonian party. And the Whigs actually were quite successful in early statehood times for Florida, something we'll get into in another podcast. I want to do a whole podcast on the Whig Party. I've read extensively on the Whig Party, partly due to my concerns about current contemporary American political parties and what might happen to them, the current Democratic Party and the current Republican Party. The press in the United States is pro-slavery. Papers throughout the South were concerned about this fort that was in Spanish Florida, Spanish West Florida. The Savannah Journal wrote, "It was not to be expected that an establishment so pernicious to the southern states, holding out as part of their population temptations to insubordination, would have been suffered to exist after the close of the war," that being the War of 1812. In the course of last winter, several states from this neighborhood fled to that fort. Excuse me, several slaves from this neighborhood fled to that fort. Others lately have gone from Tennessee and the Mississippi Territory. How long shall this evil requiring immediate remedy be permitted to exist? Because, of course, to them, slaves were private property. They were no different than pets, than your animals, right? They're no different than your livestock. Probably more like livestock than pets. I mean, I think pets were probably treated better than slaves throughout much of the South. So you're looking at a situation where the Savannah Journal, along with other newspapers in the American South, are urging an attack on this fort with freed African Americans that is under the sovereignty of another nation, which was Spain at the time. And as I said, obviously, the British played a huge role in this. They had been aligned with Spain. They had never really abandoned the idea of using Florida as an outpost against the United States. They had ceded Florida to Spain in 1783, Spain having liberated West Florida with some colonial help, American colonial help from the British. East Florida was not touched. The three attempts that the Continental Army made to invade East Florida were repulsed by British forces. St. Augustine remained a free a city under British rule throughout the Revolutionary War, as we've talked about in a previous podcast, but they had to cede Florida to Spain. However, Spain, because of European politics, Spain pretty quickly becomes aligned with Britain due to the situation in France. And therefore, Florida remains kind of ostensibly under British influence. The Apalachicola River was like a great highway if you take the whole system, right? The Apalachicola River, there's Lake Seminole, Chattahoochee River runs up what is now the border between Georgia and Alabama. The Apalachicola River represents the separation, as I mentioned, between East and West Florida previously under British rule, and then between the Eastern and Central time zones after the United States took over. And then you have the Flint River that comes out of the Seminole, Lake Seminole, and goes towards Albany, Georgia, right? But goes through southern Georgia. So these represented highways where raiders in Spanish West Florida could raid big plantations. There are a number of big plantations still that you can tour now in southern Georgia, in places like Albany, around Albany, Thomasville, Moultrie, Bainbridge, those sorts of towns, which are all drivable in short day trips from Tallahassee or from Panama City. So, in fact, a number of you can check out those plantations if you're interested, if you live in that part of the state. So when these plantations were raided, you had slaves freed and brought back to Florida. You had then the United States decide in 1816 they were going to build a base themselves on the Flint River to counter these movements. And, of course, you had General Andrew Jackson, the hero of the Battle of Pensacola in 1814, the hero of the Battle of New Orleans in early 1815, a man who did not respect law, a man who we've already done a podcast on him, really a lawless individual, a man with very little consideration, dangerous individual. there's been a lot of talk that we have, in time, changed our opinions of Andrew Jackson. But there was always a contingent that did not respect Andrew Jackson and did not like him. So, in fact, I'm going to give you a quote from Thomas Jefferson, because Jefferson and Jackson were always associated together in history because of the Democratic Party, and also because they were both Southerners. They were both slaveholders. They were both defenders of slavery. However, they were very different people. I mean, Jefferson, I think, on any ideological scale, would be put pretty far to the left. If you take the slavery issue out of it, you look at just his view of governance, of democracy, his Enlightenment and idealism views, his views of religion. Andrew Jackson, I think, is the closest facsimile to Donald Trump that we've had in American history previously. And in fact, I would compare Trump quite favorably with Jackson, in my opinion. So here's a quote from Thomas Jefferson about Andrew Jackson. This was when Andrew Jackson was running for president in 1824. "I feel much alarmed at the prospect of seeing General Jackson president. He is one of the most unfit men I know of for such a place. He has had very little respect for laws and constitutions." That's Andrew Jackson. He had no respect for international law. The fact is, West Florida was under the sovereign control of Spain. And in the War of 1812, Spain was aligned with Britain, who the United States had declared war on. Britain had not declared war on the United States, right? The United States declared war on Britain. It, for origins of the conflict that led to the conflicts that led to the War of 1812. Wikipedia, Google. I'm not saying the British were blameless. Certainly the United States had real grievances, but at the same time, they declared war on Britain, thinking Britain was preoccupied in the Napoleonic Wars fighting off France, which they were, which led to a military stalemate for the most part because Britain was stretched. Anyway, Jackson is a dangerous, dangerous guy. He had no regard for law. So Jackson decides he's going to attack this Negro fort. This was the largest instance before the American Civil War in which armed blacks resisted whites who sought to return them to slavery. Really, really significant. And it was the first event in Andrew Jackson's conquest of Florida, which is what it effectively was. General Jackson did not abide by any established rules of war. Much like the Southerners in the Civil War, they viewed Negroes, blacks, as inferior and worthy of slaughter if they could not return them to slavery. So Jackson, on July 27, 1816, used a heated shot against the fort, igniting the powder magazine in the fort and instantly killing 334 people. A few survivors that were able to make their way south. And there were also some freed blacks in the surrounding areas that were not at the fort, who then fled southward, as did, and we talked about the Seminole Wars and Andrew Jackson previously, as did the Seminole Indians, right? They began moving south from that area around the Apalachicola River, around what is now Tallahassee, what had been the center of the Apalachee culture, something we're going to talk about on another episode, and the Spanish mission culture, which we're going to get real soon, actually, in the next few weeks on this podcast. So some of the former slaves, the freed slaves, the African-Americans made their way south. They ended up at a place called Cape Florida, which is now on the island of Key Biscayne in Biscayne Bay, just east of Miami. Actually, Key Biscayne made very famous by Bebe Rebozo and Richard Nixon many, many years later, right? By that time, Miami's a major metropolitan area. They flee from Cape Florida to Andros Island in the Bahamas, where they found a town called Nichols Town in the Bahamas, named obviously for Sir Edward Nichols. The few survivors that were caught were sold back into slavery or executed. Really, really sad story. The anger among the Seminoles for the loss of the fort led directly to the First Seminole War that started in 1817. They were also much weaker without their black allies, having been either killed, decapitated, or sold back into slavery, or had fled to the Bahamas, fled south and then onward to the Bahamas eventually.
So I've recently written the book Florida and the American Revolution, came out in September of 2023. And we have to face the inconvenient reality. It's an inconvenient truth as Americans that the vast majority of blacks, African Americans as we call them now, fought on the British side in the American Revolution. Even more, even a higher percentage fought on the British side in the War of 1812. It's the same with Native Americans. Every Native American group, at least within the boundaries of what is now Florida, sided with the British in the 1770s and the Revolution, and sided with the British during the War of 1812. And this is the reality, and the brutality of the Americans towards these groups is something we still grapple with today, and hopefully we can help educate the public as to some of these things that have happened in the past. Anyway, thank you once again for listening to this edition of the Florida History Podcast. We're going to be back next week and talk about another fort related to the wars between the Americans and the Seminoles, this time Fort King and the Second Seminole War.